As Ramadan begins, the UN Secretary General renews his call for peace.
My strongest appeal today is to honor the spirit of Ramadan by silencing the guns and removing all obstacles to ensure the delivery of life-saving aid at the speed and massive scale required.
Plus, a military ship leaves the U.S. bound for Gaza to build a pier that will facilitate aid deliveries.
While it will likely be weeks, with some estimates as high as 60 days before the pier becomes operational, the plan is to have a floating base of operations to deliver aid to Palestinian territories.
And later, the security situation in Haiti and a new injection to prevent HIV. Today is Monday, March 11th, and this is VOA's Flashpoint Global Crises. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. As the Muslim holy month of Ramadan begins, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres renewed his call for peace in Gaza.
Good morning. Today marks the start of the holy month of Ramadan, a period when Muslims around the world celebrate and spread the values of peace, reconciliation, and solidarity. Yet, even though Ramadan has begun, the killing, bombing, and bloodshed continue in Gaza. We recently entered the 6 months since the Hamas terror attacks in Israel and the catastrophic Israel onslaught in Gaza began. My strongest appeal today is to honor the spirit of Ramadan by silencing the guns and removing all obstacles to ensure the delivery of life-saving aid at the speed and massive scale required. At the same time, and in the Ramadan spirit of compassion, I call for the immediate release of all hostages. The eyes of the world are watching. The eyes of history are watching. We cannot look away. We must act to avoid more preventable death.
Gaza is not the only place where Muslim civilians and Ramadan observations are affected by war. Guterres also called for peace in Sudan.
Today, I also renew my appeal for a Ramadan cessation of hostilities in Sudan. The fighting there must end for the sake of the Sudanese people who face hunger, horrors, and untold hardships. In Gaza, in Sudan, and beyond, it's time for peace. I call on political, religious, and community leaders everywhere to do everything in their power to make this holy period a time for empathy, action, and peace.
Gaza may not be the only humanitarian crisis in the world, but it is one of the most acute. The United States Army has sent a ship from Virginia on the east coast of the U.S. to the eastern Mediterranean Sea. It's loaded with gear to begin construction of a floating pier that will be used to deliver much-needed humanitarian aid to Gaza. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has the story.
Urban warfare in the Gaza Strip. The Israel Defense Forces released videos said to show troops fighting door-to-door in the city of Khan Yunis in the Gaza Strip. VOA cannot independently verify the dates or locations of the video. Its release follows a weekend where dozens of Palestinians died in Israeli airstrikes and artillery fire, according to local health officials. The situation in Gaza is dire, say health and aid workers who've been there.
They will tell you that the situation has deteriorated for a couple of reasons, and we're at the point that we are because there is a bottleneck. There used to be three entrances into the Gaza Strip. Israel controlled two of them, and Egypt controls one of them. Now, only one out of the three is partially functioning.
To get around those blockades, regional partners began dropping aid packages from the sky. Over the weekend and on the eve of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, the Jordanian Air Force over Gaza dropped pallets filled with flour, rice, baby formula, and water. And the United States Air Force dropped more than 88 bundles of aid said to contain nearly 53,000 meals and 23,000 bottles of water. Now, another planned delivery aid to Gaza is set to begin. The United States Army deployed a vessel from Virginia to the Mediterranean carrying equipment to build a temporary pier. While it will likely be weeks, with some estimates as high as 60 days before the pier becomes operational, the plan is to have a floating base of operations to deliver aid to Palestinian territories. The United Nations says a quarter of Gaza's population faces starvation. The Hamas-run health ministry in Gaza says the conflict so far killed nearly 31,000 Palestinians, a number that does not sit well with U.S. President Joe Biden.
Cannot have 30,000 more Palestinians dead as a consequence of going after. There's other ways to deal, to deal with the trauma caused by Hamas.
Biden stopped short of committing to a red line that Israel could cross that would stop U.S. support for its ally, which declared war on Hamas after its October 7 attack on Israel that killed 1,200. But as Ramadan begins, for more than 72,000 injured Palestinians, any relief by land, sea, or air can't come soon enough. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
And much of the aid that will be delivered on that pier will be given to children. The United Nations says at least 20 children in Gaza have died of starvation, and doctors say many more are increasingly suffering from grave physical and mental illness. VOA's Heather Murdoch reports from Istanbul with Nedal Hamduna and Amjad Tantesh in Rafah, Gaza.
Children in Gaza haven't been to school since the Israel-Hamas war began. But parents here say, right now, this is the least of their problems. UN figures show more than 12,000 children have died in the war, and 20 of starvation in recent weeks. Another 17,000 have lost or been separated from their parents. Almost all children in Gaza have been forced to flee their homes, and parents say, even the best cared for are traumatized. Hekmet Al-Masri, a mother in Gaza, says her son weeps at night, crying out for his father, his home, and the life he used to have. Nearly 31,000 people have been killed in Gaza, according to the Gaza Ministry of Health. The war began on October 7th, when Hamas attacked Israel, killing 1,200 people and taking 240 hostages. Most of Gaza's 2 million-plus population is now crowded into emergency shelters in Rafah, near the Egyptian border. In this hospital, pediatricians say every child they see is suffering from noticeable psychological and physical trauma and the consequences of hunger. Dr. Saeed Abdulrahman Mahmoud Marouf is a pediatrician at Abu Yusuf Al-Najjar Hospital. He says all the children he sees are having problems growing, and they are sick. Even the mothers don't have milk to feed their babies. They tell him, I can't make milk to give them. How could I possibly buy it? Some children, he says, can clearly identify bombs, planes, and who among their family or neighbors have died. Other children wail and cling to their parents nearly all the time. Many have started to hallucinate. But there are children who still have hope. They will be reunited with loved ones. 12-year-old Abed El-Razak Al-Masri says if he had a wish, it would be to go back home with his family. Parents say watching the children suffer is heartbreaking. Hekmet Al-Masri, the mother, says parents here cannot answer children when they ask for food, like meat or fish or sweets that they used to eat. There is no way to provide it, she says. Israel says it places no restrictions on the amount of aid that can get into Gaza, although it insists on inspecting all deliveries to make sure they don't carry weapons meant for Hamas. But Amnesty International accuses the Israeli military of sharply limiting the aid that enters the territory. The United Nations says widespread famine is imminent if access does not improve dramatically. Efforts to provide aid via air or sea, they say, are welcomed, but cannot replace the massive influx that is needed by land. Reporting with Nedal Hamduna and Amjad Tantesh in Rafah, Gaza, Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Istanbul.
Ukraine on Sunday rebuffed Pope Francis's call to negotiate an end to the war with Russia, with President Volodymyr Zelensky saying the pontiff was engaging in virtual mediation, and his foreign minister saying Kyiv would never capitulate. Francis said that when things were going badly for a party in a conflict, one had to show the courage of the white flag and negotiate. VOA's Laurie London spoke with Anna Chernikova in Kyiv for more on reaction to the Pope's comments.
This statement was perceived extremely negatively here in Ukraine, and there are a lot of comments, from President Zelensky, first of all, but also from the head of the Ukrainian Catholic Church as well. President Zelensky, in his speech for the nation, mentioned this incident, of course, and he said that from the very beginning of the war, and particularly from the beginning of full-scale invasion, people of different religious groups and religious directions came together to defend Ukraine, and they continue to do so, which are presented more than 2,000 kilometers away from Ukraine. As he mentioned, trying to help would not definitely be appropriate. So basically, President Zelensky just made it quite clear that Ukraine would not accept such proposals, especially from the leaders of any religious organizations, because of course, religion is about peace, but it's not about putting aggressor aside of this of the actions that aggressor is doing. And the head of the Greek Catholic Church in Ukraine also addressed a statement saying that Ukrainian Catholics would never ever stop fighting because Ukraine is defending its future, its life, and defending its freedom. So this is the task for people, for everyone here in Ukraine, and also in general the society. Pope Francis has not very good reputation here in Ukraine because he is accused by Ukrainians of being too soft on Russia, and basically a lot of people and a lot of experts as well question why Pope Francis suggests Ukraine to wave white flag instead of suggesting Russia to get their army and their military away from Ukrainian territory.
This comes following last week's State of the Union address in the United States. President Biden really came out strongly on his support for Ukraine. What's the reaction there on that?
Yeah, actually, this big speech by President Biden was received extremely positively here in Ukraine. However, I think that the main message here would be that people now are waiting for actions rather than words, because of course President Biden basically started his speech with Ukraine and comparing the fight for democracy and freedom with the case of Ukraine, and he was very strong on demonstrating the support and again calling for finally approving the aid bill, and Ukrainians found a lot of hope for this aid to be approved sooner than later and until it is too late. So it was really a positive reaction. But again, as I mentioned, people now are waiting for actions and hope for actions because Ukraine depends big time on the U.S. support.
Laurie London is the host of Flashpoint Ukraine here on The Voice of America. She was speaking with our correspondent in Kyiv, Anna Chernikova. You're listening to Flashpoint Global Crises from The Voice of America. I'm Steve Karish in Washington. There's a new medicine available in Zambia. It's an injection that's supposed to prevent HIV infection. We'll take a look in a few minutes. Now to Haiti. The small Caribbean nation is the poorest in the Western Hemisphere, and it was thrust into political chaos after the July 2021 assassination of President Jovenel Moïse. Just this past weekend, the U.S. and other Western countries evacuated their embassies of non-essential personnel. Interim President Ariel Henry is taking refuge in Puerto Rico, unable to return to Haiti amid calls for his resignation. Joining me to discuss the situation is Sandra Lemaire, chief of VOA's Creole Service.
So Ariel Henry, the prime minister, traveled first to a meeting, a CARICOM meeting, outside of the country in Guyana. From there, from Guyana, he traveled to Nairobi, Kenya, where he signed a bilateral accord with the Kenyan president, William Ruto, authorizing the deployment of Kenyan police officers to Haiti to lead a multinational security mission. And then he tried to return to Haiti, but the gangs have taken basically surrounded the airport. The airport is closed, so he could not land in Haiti. So he tried to land in the Dominican Republic. Apparently, they thought it over when Ali was asking for his plane to land and thought it's not a good idea. It's a bad idea. It could just make things a lot worse. So they told him he cannot land. So from there, his plane went to Puerto Rico and landed in San Juan. So he is currently in San Juan. He cannot come back to Haiti because the Haitians said they don't want him back. They want him to resign. He's refusing to resign so far.
So why the calls for his resignation? What's that all about? Where'd that start?
So the calls for his resignation are because from the very start, when he came into power, many people were unhappy and against it because he wasn't elected. He was basically named by the assassinated president, Jovenel Moïse, just a few days before the assassination. He has been named as a person of interest in the president's assassination. So already that caused a lot of people to be against him. Then under his rule, gang violence has escalated, kidnappings have escalated, the economic situation of the country is terrible, you know, inflation is super high. Nothing has really gotten better in the country. It's just gotten way, way worse than when Moïse was in power.
He is the interim prime minister brought in after the assassination. Is there any consensus? Is there any progress on a more permanent government?
There is not. And that is the whole problem and why Haiti is in the chaos that it is today. So today, actually, there is a huge emergency meeting that CARICOM is holding in Kingston, Jamaica. We have a reporter there right now as we speak, where they are.
And this is where Secretary Blinken is headed to today, correct?
Exactly, exactly. And where they are going to, we are expecting that they will announce a plan for Haiti to go forward.
Sandra Lemaire is service chief of VOA's Creole service. Ms. Lemaire, thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you.
As U.S. voters prepare for a new round of primaries on Tuesday, President Joe Biden and his Republican rival Donald Trump traveled to the swing state of Georgia over the weekend to hold parallel campaign events. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias has this recap.
American freedoms will be on the ballot in November, stressed President Joe Biden during a campaign event in Atlanta, Georgia. Ahead of the state's primary election Tuesday, he reminded voters of the track record of his Republican rival, former President Donald Trump, on abortion rights.
He came to office determined to see Roe v. Wade overturned. In fact, he brags about it. Well, he got his wish, and states are passing bans that criminalize doctors, forcing rape and incest victims to leave their states to get help.
But Georgia, Biden argued, can help shield women's reproductive rights.
Send me a Congress that supports the right to choose, and I promise you, I will restore Roe v. Wade as the law of the land again.
Trump also campaigned Saturday, but in Northwest Georgia, where he strongly criticized Biden's recent State of the Union address.
Whether you are a Republican, an independent, or a disillusioned Democrat, of which there are many, all you had to do is watch that horrible State of the Union. Crooked Joe Biden talked about Ukraine before he talked about America. Joe Biden should not be shouting angrily at America. America should be shouting angrily at Joe Biden.
The former president also decried Biden's immigration policies, citing the murder of nursing student Laken Riley on February 22nd. She allegedly died at the hands of a Venezuelan immigrant who entered the United States illegally.
He was an illegal migrant, and he shouldn't have been in our country, and he never would have been under the Trump policy. Biden has implemented a formal policy that illegal aliens who intrude into the United States are granted immunity from deportation.
Biden, who used the word illegal during his State of the Union address to refer to Riley's alleged murderer, later apologized and Saturday defended his own immigration record.
I introduced a comprehensive plan to fix our immigration system, secure our border, provide a pathway for citizens, for dreamers and their families, farm workers, essential workers who helped us through the pandemic and are part of the fabric of our community.
What the weekend remarks of both presidential hopefuls had in common was the sense of urgency for voters to show up at the polls and help them become their respective party's presidential nominees.
And I ask you to join us on the noble quest of saving our country, saving our country. Together, we will turn the page forever on the miserable nightmare of the Biden presidency.
It's a contest between competing forces in the battle for the soul of this nation, between those who want to pull America backwards and those who want to move America to the future.
Hawaii, Mississippi, Washington, and Georgia will be holding primaries on Tuesday. Earning all the delegates at stake, or just a fraction of them, could hand over a presidential nomination win for either candidate. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
And finally today, Zambia has received the first shipment of a new medicine to prevent HIV infection. The delivery makes Zambia the second country in the world after the U.S. to offer this injectable preventative outside of a research setting. Kathy Short reports from Lusaka.
For 2 years, Precious Mbomboli took pills daily to prevent infection with HIV, the virus that causes AIDS, but the 21-year-old is among the first in Zambia to receive a new injectable prevention drug.
For 2 years, yes.
She says she changed to the new injectable in late February because the pill was difficult for her. She used to forget to take it. Sometimes she was not home at the time when she was to take the medication. So she says the injection makes her feel better and confident. The new drug is known as cabotegravir long-acting. Each shot prevents infection for 6 months. Zambia is the first low- or middle-income country to offer the drug to the public. Lina Mwango is technical director of the local nonprofit CHEB Zambia.
Our target age group for this is adolescent girls and young women who are aged 16 to 24, as well as we're reaching out to their sexual partners.
Local representatives called connectors are helping roll out the program. Joy Tapale is one.
The connector is based in the community. We do community mobilization. We do community sensitizations. We go on screen the girls that are eligible for DREAMS. Those that are eligible get to be enrolled.
The U.S. government has donated nearly 15,000 vials of the drug known as cabotegravir. That's enough to protect 2,000 Zambians against HIV for 1 year, the U.S. Embassy says. But experts say people who get the shot still need to take precautions. Kebi Musokotwane heads the Zambia National AIDS Council.
People get the injection and then they think it's a silver bullet, in that then they can go out and sleep around. And really the message here is that that's not why this drug has been brought on board. To realize that this drug does not prevent pregnancies, it doesn't prevent other sexually transmitted infections.
About 1.4 million Zambians are living with HIV, with about 33,000 new infections per year. Experts hope the new drug can help bring those numbers down. Kathy Short, VOA News, Lusaka, Zambia.
And that's going to wrap up today's show. There is more VOA coverage 24 hours a day on our website, voanews.com, and across our social media platforms. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thanks for listening. Until tomorrow, I'm Steve Karish.
For deeper dives and expert analysis, listen to VOA Podcasts. Issues in the News explores the biggest stories every weekend, while International Edition keeps you informed every weekday. Plus, with the 5-minute newscast at the top of every hour, you're always up to date.